by Rene with Blast Furnace Radio. And today we have with us Malik, who is part of Common Grounds. And we have been looking forward to meeting him here in New Orleans. We're talking to Malik before a press conference about the future of the work of Common Grounds.
Good morning.
So, Malik, tell us.
Now, wait a minute. You going to have to hold it. All right.
So, Malik, why don't you talk to us about when you were young and started to become active?
My activism started in basically, I believe it was in 61, no, about 62 or 63. I saw a very courageous hero of mine, Reverend Avery Alexander, set at a counter in the New Orleans City Hall's cafeteria. And for that, he was dragged off the counter. He was jerked off the counter, dragged up the stairs. I believe it was two or three flights of stairs to the mayor's office. And then after they talked to the mayor about that he had the nerve to go into this counter, he was dragged in back down the stairs. Now, the only reason why this was happening is because he was black. And at that time, it opened my, it truly opened my eyes to just how blatant the racism is. And then I knew that I had to make a choice. You know, so my activism basically started then. Now, my awareness. Now, my activism started in 1970 when I joined the Black Panther Party.
Now, when you joined the Black Panther Party, what city were you in?
Right here in New Orleans.
Oh, you were in New Orleans. And tell us about the Black Panther chapter here.
The party was started here by a person named Steve Green, who came down under the direction of Geronimo Pratt from L.A. to organize a chapter. To organize, not necessarily a chapter, but to organize. And Steve came down with 200 papers. He met two brothers, and from there they started selling the papers, just going out and making awareness. I found out that they was doing this maybe about a month and a half after they started. And that's when we started what was known as the NCCF, a National Committee to Combat Fascism. We started that around March.
Did you have a breakfast program?
We had a tremendous breakfast program. We had a program, some mornings we used to feed 300 to 400 kids. You know,
remember what people used to say about that?
Oh, you know, but I tell you what, you know, for the kids who had that breakfast, for the families that was able to have that savings that they no longer had to buy a breakfast item. So I gave them a chance to buy something else. Our crime abatement program, you know, made the community the desire, which was once classified as the most dangerous housing project in the country, into one of the safest. Our sickle cell awareness, you know, truly brought awareness to this city. There's just so many things, you know, I could say about the things that we did as in those early days of activism, because most of it is relating to what I'm doing now.
So why a lot of people have gone on to their brilliant careers and cashing in on their popularity from the 60s, you haven't, so why not?
I didn't get involved in the struggle for peace and justice to capitalize on it. I got involved in the struggle for peace and justice to make it happen. The fight. This is a war, a war against injustice. And I hope and I pray that it continue to be a nonviolent war. Because I don't believe you can have justice, through violence.
There's a lot of talk about violence and revolutionary violence and class war, and it goes on and on and on, and I'm sure you're surrounded by this talk.
Well, I was a part of it. I was entrenched in it. As a member of the Panther Party, we was armed. We advocated self-defense. And one of the most greatest and profound events that ever happened in my life, one of them, happened when the police came to raid our office, and the community surrounded our office. And that's men in public housing surrounded our office and told the police, here in the Deep South, that you will not raid this office. And they did it in the act of nonviolence disobedience, because they was trying to tell them to get out the way. And they stayed. And I'm not talking about 10 or 20 or 100 or 200. I'm talking about between 2,000 to 3,000, And they surrounded our office. And, it let me know, because I knew a shootout was going to happen. And I just figured I'd go ahead on and let them come. They'll probably kill us and we'll kill some of them, but that's not justice. That could be revenge, but that's not justice. Because every act of violence, it's going to be just to the winner and unjust to those who is being victimized by it. So there's no justice in it, and without that, it could be no peace. It's definitely no peace. And so again, these are the things that happened then. I believe that everything that I've endured in the 36 years that I've been involved in the struggle for peace and justice, it haven't been a capitalizing, but I tell you what, it's been a glorious experience, because I believe I've been blessed to meet some of the greatest people that I would want to meet in my lifetime.
Fast forward 35 years, and now the children of the people that we were fighting have come from all over the country. I mean, people are doing stuff like this all over the country, and nobody comes. You sit on your computer all day, and nobody's going to come. But people have come from all over the country and different countries here, and was Common Grounds, did that come out of Hurricane Katrina?
Oh, yes. Common Ground came out of Hurricane Katrina. Scott Crow and I, we found the Common Ground on September the 5th. Of 05. So what you see that didn't happen, it happened since September the 5th of 05. Sharon Johnson, my partner, she had $30. I had $50. I had $20. So with $50 at my kitchen table, we sit and we found Common Ground. Then after we found it, we got on the phone, we got on the internet, and start contacting people we had been involved with in the course of our history within this struggle. I called just about everybody I had contacts with. And And the ones I didn't have contacts with, I called others and asked them to contact them. So just through that chain, you know. And the wonderful efforts of Scott and Brandon, you know, Brandon Darby. Get this, and next thing you know, we went from 5 people to just about 20 in a week. And one day I was coming back from walking my dog, and I said, man, what in the world is going on? I came to the house, and it was about 60 people. You know, and ever since then, we have grown. Since September the 5th, we had well over 7,000 or 8,000 volunteers. Just during spring break, we had, I believe, 2,800 or 2,700 volunteers.
We have been shown around to the different aspects of Common Grounds and are just amazed because, you know, there is just so much going on. It's a lot more about justice than about disaster relief.
Well, disasters, relief organizations basically deal with disasters. Natural or national disasters. But see, this wasn't a national or natural disaster. This was a natural disaster, but it was a national tragedy. And people came down because of the tragedy, because of the injustice. We didn't make a call just to those who believe in bringing relief. I made a call to those who stood for peace and justice to come down. You know, so, oh yes, our advocacy is paramount. I mean, when you have, I told you about what happened to Reverend Avery Alexander. So, I mean, the only time I saw such an event was in 63 or 64 in my life. And then in 05, when I saw African Americans being denied access into another parish simply because of the fact that they're African Americans coming from New Orleans. You know? And, you know, I couldn't, nothing in my history prepared me for the fact that here in a state of emergency, people fleeing for their lives, you know, in America, that one section of America will be denied access to another population of Americans simply because they have the wrong color.
It's very obvious that this isn't going to be a year or two. It's going to be a decade rebuilding and trying to wrench out of the system the injustice that it has done. It seems like there's going to be a lot of work for a lot of years.
Oh, yes. I figure that this is going to probably be the rebuilding of New Orleans will probably take somewhere between 10 and 12 years. You know, that's if New Orleans is ever rebuilt. Because first thing we have to do is start thinking smart. We got to stop thinking about making levees or preserving levees. We need to be thinking about preserving and the restoration of our wetlands. That's the first thing we need to do. And we need to be talking about really building a storm protection system, one that is not trying to control nature, but one that's trying to live within nature. And once we do that, then we could rebuild a city, a great city, a progressive city, and I believe one of the most progressive cities in the world. You know, I believe we have the opportunity here. We have the opportunity to break the shackles of fossil fuel dependency. That we need to look at this, we need to explore this, we need to encourage this, we need to implement this, you know. And no other city have this. We have an opportunity to turn this lemon into some real lemonade, you know. And I don't believe that we can do it unless the activist community, unless those who truly stand for peace and justice, wherever they are, you know, is coming and do the work. And that's what I see here. We had for spring break over 200 universities. That's when it's 800 students came from over 200 universities. And also from 8 countries. You know, I mean, that then came down, answered our call, and came down, and they did a wonderful job. We got it out almost 300 homes. You know,
350.
Oh, so that's all right. But see, you know better than me. And then we undid churches. We undid two enormous businesses here, and Coleman's. And now we are doing another one further down the street. You know, our clinic has been
medical clinic.
Oh yes, we have. We operate 3 health clinics. You know, one have become a permanent health clinic. I mean, and all this in 7 months, you know, and the only reason why this great phenomena have been able to happen is because, you know, the greatness of the American people, not the government. I think we have a rich government, a powerful government, but I don't think we have a great government, but I know the greatness of the American people. And those who really stand for peace and justice. You know, I mean, years after I'm dead and gone, you know, when people think about what happened in New Orleans, they're going to always think about the courage and the fortitude of those who have made such sacrifices to come down here and help in the rebuilding of New Orleans. I mean, we have done what the city refused to do. You know, and I'm not talking about the work. I'm talking about bringing people together. For the first time in the history of this city, you see whites in the Ninth Ward, in the lower Ninth Ward, working side by side, and in many cases working in the homes of blacks, trying to help them get their lives back in order. Just think what that's doing to undo the racism that exists here. I mean, when you see individuals that's in the Deep South, you know, because I'm going to tell you, this is not someplace else. This is in, because I mean, during slavery, half the slaves that was brought into this country came straight through New Orleans. You know, but now you're starting to see individuals coming in and breaking these edifices that we built to separate ourselves, you know. And they've done more for race relation, and they have offered hope. Our health clinic in Algiers, the first one, you know, started off as a first aid station. Now we are a full accredited health clinic. We hoping that one day that health clinic can blossom into a solidarity hospital. We have offered now health services for a community that have been absent of health care for at least the 58 years I've been on this earth. You know, but now they have a permanent health clinic. Work that we're doing for stress reduction in a time in the most stressful period of American history. You know, we're doing it. Nothing but the activist community. When I say we, I don't just mean Common Ground. I mean the activist community that is down here. Whether they're working for the People's Hurricane Relief Fund, SOS, or regardless of organization. You know, I mean, the great sacrifices that they are making for the stand of peace and justice gonna always, I mean, you can't ignore it. You can't ignore the positive change. You can't ignore that many of these communities, if those who have made that commitment was absent, then think of where New Orleans would be right now.
We're getting ready to start a press conference here, and I wanted to ask you one final question. Do you still feel young?
No. I know I'm an old guy. ain't nothing going to change it. But this is a press conference, and more than likely the press, I know the mainstream press probably will not come. You know, because they don't want to cover this. They don't want to cover this kind of stuff. That's why it came. That's why I told you I do this for you right now, because I know they never covered us. If they did, it was mostly in a negative way. You know, I mean, only ABC have given us any form of honest press. You know, I mean, out of the, you know, some of the mainstreams. You know, but I know I wouldn't cover it either. If I was an enemy of peace and justice, you know. But you know, for those who may come, you know, and those who may see what, you know, see what we are doing, you know. But most of them know. But those who would come, and which you will see, I would say maybe. You know, if any of that first row, man, and that first row is five chairs, that's about five or six of them might show up.
Well, listen, Malik, it was good to finally meet you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, because, man, listen, it's the alternative media that makes the difference. I mean, it's always been in Louisiana history, I mean, in America's history. The reason why slavery was in is because of that alternative party. You know, the reason why workers' rights, you know, that alternative movement. You know, so again, you know, it have always been the alternative media that exposed the lies of the mainstream and forced them to tell the truth. So I thank you.
I've ever experienced. I've been on death row. I've been in prison riots. I've been in shootouts with the police. Nothing that I've experienced, even going to Iraq. Nothing. And I'm a Vietnam veteran. Nothing that I've experienced prepared me for those 4 days right after the hurricane. I have I was seeing the closest thing I ever want to see to pure fascism in America.
Could you explain to Sam that really sums up what you're talking about?
One, blatant racism. Black, especially a black male. Police seeing him with anything that looked like a weapon, they was literally killed. They wasn't killed, they was beaten down savagely and arrested. Some of them were just being just done got through doing rescues and then savagely beaten and charged with looting and thrown in jail. The women and children that was denied access to Jefferson Parish. The fact that white vigilantes roamed the streets and had carte blanche on who they would kill. And that's all you had to do is kill a black man and say he was this nigga was looting. And wasn't nothing else done. His body wasn't even picked up. You know, and that went on. We seen bodies that laid in the streets of Algiers for up to 2 weeks. So, we constantly was going through this. I seen sometime opportunities was given to others, especially with that Dust of Dawn shoot to kill curfew. But that only applied to blacks. I seen a time when I couldn't even leave my porch. But at the same time, I watched again, I saw times that when I couldn't leave my porch, when Brandon and Scott was able to roam the streets, you know, at night. You know, and, every time I saw a black that was caught in the streets of Algiers, they went to jail. But they were beaten up. Brandon and them was able to do it, and they took advantage of that white privilege in order to help our community. I seen a time where we wouldn't have water, and the water was good in Algiers, and nobody would tell us. For three days we was surviving off of bottled water. We had basically stored right before the hurricane happened, because we didn't know the water was good. You know, we was bringing it out, treating people that was walking across that bridge trying to get to the canal, the Algiers side of the ferry, and was passing out for dehydration, you know, when the water was good and nobody was safe. Well, the police wasn't doing nothing. You just had vigilantes. You had whites that was given a carte blanche to protect their community. Pickup trucks with not only shotgun, was automatic weapons. I seen some of them that was more well armed than the police. You know, I seen some that had machine pistols.
Walking around,
they put logs in the streets, you know, blocking off streets in Algiers. Algiers Point, I live at the end of the point on Atlantic, you know, and from Atlantic to Bounty, from Opelousas to Patterson. You know, if you was black, you wasn't allowed to walk through those areas. Then you caught hell. You caught hell every time that's how I found out about it. Because a couple of guys told me that one guy, one of my neighbors, he said, "Man, listen, there are some white boys around the corner was about to kill me." But they're going to tell a lady came out and said that I live here. I said, "What?" I said, "Man, take me around there and show me." And I went around there. I seen some of my neighbors. Was a part of this. And I asked them, "What the hell y'all doing? What's going on? What y'all doing?" "We protecting our neighborhood." And I said, "Man, y'all gonna mess around and start a race riot." "Well, we prepared for it because we gonna protect our neighborhood." Those was the condition. Then the next time, they was all up around my house. That's why I was telling Secure one day when my dog came in the yard, I thought sure they had sick pneumonia. You know, but it just so happened that he was just another victim of the hurricane. You know, but I thought sure that they had sick that dog on me. When I made a call, a lot of people said, "Well, Malik, bro, y'all need to leave." But only Scott Crow said, "Well, hey, Malik, we'll be down there to help you." You know, and they came down and they stayed. I mean, they literally stayed.
Now, started from how many people?
started with four.
Four people.
At my kitchen table. At a, not this big, but at a little small kitchen table we started.
Now you're up to?
We had almost 8,000 volunteers. I was telling one of my friends right here from the Alternative Press, for spring break, we had over 2,800 people. Roughly around 2,800 people. That did an amazing job. Look at the amazing effort that's going on here. How else can you feel but rejuvenated when you meet young people like Jeremiah, who made this happen? That have been working tirelessly in this area, and have always stood up. Anytime I've asked anything of him, he's been right there, And he have made things happen, with Brandon Dunn in the Night Ward. Because I watch him in the lower Night Ward get bit by two spiders when nobody else was allowed to stay. And Justin, who made the kind of sacrifice, and this was a person that just graduated from one of the most prestigious colleges in the United States, but made a sacrifice to come in at lower Night Ward and use his white privilege. Because I know what, in this city, if I would have went in that Night Ward and tried to open up that blue house, they would have killed me. I would just been another dead nigga as far as they're concerned. Because they would have came up in there and shot me down. But because of the fact that they took advantage of that privilege, they opened up that community now. And I gave people hope on rebuilding that community. And, these is some of the most unsung heroes in the struggle for peace and justice in post-Katrina New Orleans.
What are we doing today?
We're here to, I don't want to go too deep in it because this is a project of Brandon. I don't like he's one of our, one of the coordinators for Common Ground, and I will let him go forward with that. But but I'm gonna tell you what you're about to hear is gonna be one of the most amazing stories that I believe is happening in New Orleans. And when he introduced some of his staff, some of the people that is working with him, that's making this happening, and you'll see just what kind of partnership that can be developed in this city when you have people that is willing to have ideas outside of that traditional box, what can happen. So with that, I'll turn it on to the person who's really making this happen.
All right. First off, I'd like to welcome and thank everyone for coming. We are Esther and Charles. We'll be over here shortly. They're walking around the permaculture garden. But this is the Arctic, and it's the sole Uptown Common Ground operation right now, but it's certainly being used as a launching pad for operations in the summer and in the future. That we're evaluating what opportunities exist in this area and what sort of needs there are. And we've had a lot of help with the various Common Ground members, including Charlotte, who's been working in the permaculture garden outside, and Monk, who is the medic around here. We've got Bromwin Williams, who is coming over here, was a coordinator at this site. Erica, who is working on bioremediation at our garden out back, and some other gardens in the city where we basically are growing plants that will help to remediate the soil, pull the heavy metals out, and just make it to make the soil such that plants can grow and prosper, which is something that is lacking. And but we're very glad that you are here. We have a lot to show the rest of the state and the city and the country and the world of alternative ways to accomplish what we're trying to do. Take a city that was devastated and turn it into a community that can grow. And we're very fortunate to have been able to use this site as a vehicle to accomplish some of that uptown. And Esther Dyer is the proprietor of the building, and I'd like to have her talk some about what Common Ground has been doing at the Arctic.
Thank you. I've got brochures for everybody, and I'll quote myself, because I was rewriting the brochure in preparation for coming here. Arctic Studios was an egg and butter warehouse. $13 million worth of produce went through here. I bought it in 2001. The day before Katrina, it was 100% rented. The flood water came up. There were between 12 and 24 inches for over 2 weeks. The two guys that were staying here to take care of the building swam out, and the roof blew off. And of course, as with everyone else, we're still negotiating with insurance companies. But the real story for me is not what hasn't happened, but what has happened. And that's a story of volunteerism, of people giving to people, and of the real meaning of a good outcome from Katrina, and that is how we can all help one another. You'll see the wonderful work of Common Ground inside inside of Art Egg, and without their thought, leadership, commitment, the building would not be ready for the next storm, and would not in any way be ready to be able to be a center for arts and culture and environmental sustainability. And Common Ground has truly been an enormous gift, not just to us, but throughout the city. And I have been very pleased to have had the space that we have been able to have Common Ground volunteers here so that we can do something for them, and to have them also working, and you'll hear from Charles later, in looking at how we can take some of the deconstruction materials and make organic gardens and make a place where we all here in New Orleans can rebuild our communities. And Common Ground has really led the effort for that. And I remember getting here right after Rita, when I had no refrigerator and nothing else, and Common Ground was already here doing work, taking care of people, taking care of homes, and helping to revitalize the city that we all love. So I have nothing but great gratitude and immense admiration for Common Ground and what it's done and what it will do in the future as it brings together all of these great volunteers that want to come to New Orleans and want to help rebuild one of the United States' most beautiful cities. So thank you. Thank you very much.
One thing that's unique about Common Ground is that it has the ability to set up and deconstruct sites very quickly. And what sort of a long-term plan we see and happening with that sort of ability is that we can go to disaster areas and quickly set up a functioning site that can care for any number of people with, you know, internet access, with a mobile kitchen, with sanitary restroom facilities, sleeping accommodations. This can be done very quickly, and certainly the entities that were responsible for setting up these camps post-Katrina have obviously shown that they're not able to do that. Well, Common Ground is now proving that we are able to do that, and are hoping to take that to the rest of the country and to the rest of the world. And another way that Common Ground has been working in this area, and is something that is valuable across the country, is to incorporate the community members into organizations that can work towards the community betterment. And Shakur Al-Jawani has been working on developing a workers' cooperative that would sort of bring into its organization the community members and allow them to become more skilled. And I'd like for him to speak more about that.
One part of Common Ground's mission is not only to provide immediate relief, but to begin to provide long-term support for rebuilding our communities in just and sustainable ways. We've looked at, you know, and that means that not only do we have to look at how do we rebuild from the Katrina and Rita, but how do we also acknowledge that the public policies and inner cities and rural areas have not been working, that the traditional approaches to economic development have been a failure for areas like much of New Orleans, and so that we have to come up with new approaches and innovative ideas and out-the-box kind of thinking in order to be able to affect change in such massive problems. And so what we've looked at is an approach that incorporates dynamic citizen participation and community planning and development, as seen in projects like the Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative in Boston and the Los Angeles Alliance for in LA, and combining that and marrying that with approaches like the Mondragon cooperatives in Basque, Spain, where they went from a handful of people and built a multi-billion dollar network of cooperatives that are able to improve the lives of the Basque region of Spain. And so we're talking about not just building some cooperatives, we're talking about building a regional cooperative economy. We're talking about beginning to, right now we're launching a construction workers cooperative called Invest. We talk about investing in your own community, investing in yourself, and, by joining the Invest Construction Workers Cooperative. That cooperative is going to be bringing New Orleanians to work, rebuilding their communities, but not rebuilding it in the same old ways, doing it in a green way, doing it in using the new ideas with solar panels, talking about hurricane resistant approaches and using eco-friendly building supplies. We're also talking about other types of cooperatives, housing cooperatives, child care cooperatives, seafood producer cooperatives with folks like the Puma Indians, shrimp producers. So we're looking at coming up with cooperatives and other group-based business development processes that be able to meet the needs of New Orleanians and people of the Gulf Coast, but at the same time putting them at the center of the process, having them being the managers and owners of the businesses that they work for, and we think that's the a way that we can begin to not only deal with the problems of Katrina and Rita, but also deal with the problems of race and class and failed public policy that have been at the center of a number of the ills that have been affecting New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. So we're excited about it. We're getting a great response, and we hope to have a number of different activities where we'll be talking to New Orleanians about what are their needs, what are the kinds of services that they need to provide it for them, and how can we come together in a cooperative and group-based and community development approach to be able to solve those problems.
We'll go and see shortly, but outside this bay door right there, we have a very exciting permaculture garden that has been developed by Charles Reith, professor at Tulane, along with a number of other volunteers and people working with his company to basically produce an exhibit of how permaculture can work and what it can accomplish. And Charles would hopefully speak a lot more about this.
Okay, well, thank you. I'd actually like to structure my remarks a little bit around a story of the building that's happened here, because I think it's a story that's affecting the whole city, and it's a reflection on Common Ground's contribution as well as that of many other volunteers. I'm with the Payson Center for International Development and Technology Transfer, that's at Tulane University Department, and the Alliance for Affordable Energy. And both of those organizations had offices and a mixed-use classroom conference room in this building. Well, when I visited the building between Katrina and Rita, I found that the Payson space was utterly destroyed because of the roof having been blown off and the second floor being exposed to rain. But the Alliance office, interestingly, was still intact. And it was protected by a thin layer of foil called a radiant barrier that had served to repel the rain. And I lingered in that office for a while because it was cool and comfortable. It was passively survivable, which is a key word that we use in advocating a sensible rebuild for this city. It was it was cool because of the proper insulation, and it was light because of the solar tube and the daylighting, other features that bring the light into the interior of the building. So it was a showcase of the type of energy efficiency and survivability that we are pushing for the rebuild. Unfortunately, Rita destroyed even that because it was exposed to the rains, and as there was no roof in place to protect it. In the period after that was an incredibly dark time for us in this building, and I think throughout New Orleans. Many of us at the Alliance for Affordable Energy were lobbying for a green rebuild. We went to countless meetings of the Bring New Orleans Back Commission, of the City Council and state agencies, lobbying for a stronger, greener city. And with the lone exception of an energy efficiency provision in the Uniform Building Code, we got no traction at all. And, you know, I guess I'm speaking for myself now, not my organizations, but we found the government disengaged, far more interested in their fiefdoms than providing. Anyway,